It's 8:09. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, in an effort just to change things up a bit, we're holding a candidate forum here on the Local News Hour rather than having separate candidate interviews. As you know, you may have received a ballot in the mail. And in the studio with me, I have three candidates running for Park City Board of Education. This is in Precinct 3. I have Art Brothers, Petra Butler, and Mo Hickey. Precinct 3 represents the Park Meadows, Park West, Quarry Mountain, Ranch Place, and Silver Spring neighborhoods. The seat is now occupied by Tanya Knauer, who decided not to run for re-election. So good morning to the candidates, and thanks for being here.
Good morning, Liz.
Good morning.
I've asked all of the candidates to come prepared with 60-second opening statements. So let's go alphabetically. And Art, if you would begin.
Hi, Leslie. It's good to be here. I have lived here in Park City for 26 years. I have six kids, and five of them have actually finished with high school up here, been through K through 12. I have some experience with the schools as a result. I have a 10th grader he'll be entering 10th grade next year. And I've always appreciated the good things that Park City School District has done for my children. I'd like to give back, like to help out, and I believe that there's an opportunity right now to bring the community together after the rift of the bond election and find common ground so that we can move forward in an appropriate fashion.
Okay, Petra?
Good morning, Park City. Thank you, Leslie, for having me on the air this morning. My background is a little bit different than everybody else. I come with 25-plus years in law enforcement, 5 years with the United States Secret Service, and 21 with the FBI. I've been an advocate for children all the way back to high school when I was working with Big Brothers and Big Sisters. I bring a completely different perspective to the board. I bring my investigative and my analytical skills. I bring leadership. I bring policy development. I bring a very strong task force background. But mostly, I also want to give back to the community. I have a 5-year-old son that has been in the school system, and he struggled. And the teachers and the community have done a lot to help him. And I'd like to continue my community service and give back.
Okay, Mo Hickey.
Morning, Leslie. I've been a resident of Park City full-time for the past 11 years. I've had a second home here prior to that for 28 years now. When I moved to Park City, I got involved with education first with the Men of McPolin, which was a father's group at McPolin Elementary School. And then I was elected to the school board in 2008. And 2012, I had to resign from my seat when I moved to Park Meadows last year. I have two children currently in the district. One's going to be a senior next year, and the other one is going to be a sophomore. I think the Park City School District is a very important part of this community. I enjoyed my service on the board, and I would like to continue that service.
All right, Petra, let's start with you here. What do you think the top three issues are facing Park City School District?
First is fiscal responsibility. I think there's going to be some discussion today about a sustainable budget. I think that's something that we definitely need to focus on. I think there's some programs that we need to have some accountability for, some checks and balances put in place to make sure that we can continue with a sustainable budget. It has been an issue in the past, and I hope we have further discussion about it today. I think one of the bigger issues we need to address is communication. I think, as we can see by incidents that have happened in the past, that there is a lack of trust with regard from the community, with regard to the school board and to the superintendent. And I think communication is probably one of the biggest issues that we need to focus on. And last, I think we need to focus on moving forward with the bond. We constantly hear about how the bond failed with this or with that. It's time to put that behind us, and we need to move forward, and we need to concentrate on what's in the best academic interest of our children and move forward in that respect.
All right. And for you, Mo?
The three areas that I think are most important right now are, as Petra said, the capital needs, which would include possibly a bond. I think we've had 400 new students come into the school district in the past 3 years, and they didn't disappear, so we have capital needs to address. We need to look at our budget both as in terms of sustainable, but in providing the needs that our community expects from our school system. And lastly, we have to look at the achievement gap and what are the factors that are really affecting the achievement gap. There are a lot of things that we don't talk about in this community regarding that area, and I think they need to be discussed openly.
And for you, Art Brothers?
Well, obviously, the things that the other candidates have mentioned are important. I am concerned that those who speak English as a second language. Among those who speak English as a second language, only 7% of them are proficient in reading, read at grade level. That's a crisis, in my view. We need to do something to bring that to parity as quickly as possible. I know that there have been some ideas that have been put forth that are underway to help address these problems as they move forward, starting with very young children. But we need to work with those who are going to be entering the workforce or moving on to college as soon as possible and as quickly as possible. And I believe that working through the community, we can do that. We can bring that together.
The current Board of Education challenged the superintendent to reduce administrative costs. The current budget, I believe, includes about $80,000 for a new communications director. It looks on the budget, though, I think only about 57 because the position was increased from half-time to full-time. So this is the first time that I recall that the district having a communications director. Do we need one? And if so, why? And Petra, when you talk about how you think communication is really one of the top issues for you, maybe let me start with you here.
You know, that's a very good question. I've only been involved with regard to everything that's happening in the school district over the last couple of months. And so based on what I have seen, I think we strongly need a communications director, somebody who can be in charge of gathering all the information and putting it out all at once. I think that is something that both the board and the superintendent need to work on together, a better plan with regard to communication. So to have one person putting out that information is probably a good idea. If you look at other districts also have this similar position, so it's not unusual for that to be in place.
Mo, you agree with the decision to spend about $80,000?
I think it's a good decision based on how education has changed certainly over the past 10 years. Communication is more difficult in one sense now. People do get their source of information from a number of different sources. I also think that parents are much more engaged in Park City, in particular in the school district. So being able to teach, not only be a communication director in terms of getting out information, but also working with administration and staff on proper forms of communication, timeliness of communication, I think it's a big job, and I think it's something that we've been lacking.
And Art, can you support that expenditure?
I like Molly. She's a great person to work with, and I think that she's doing her job as well as possible. The fact that she was hired is an opportunity to overcome some of the deficiencies that we have, obviously have in the community and in our current administration. I wish that it had been not necessary to hire her, but I like her, and I think that it was a good move to hire her. I'd like to see us improve our communications to the point that perhaps that role can be reduced.
It appears the community, or it feels like the community to me, lost a lot of trust with the school district and school board after the May 3rd incident. That, of course, being when a threat had been made back in October, targeting some members of the Park City High School staff. How would you have handled that incident any different, Mo?
Well, not knowing all the details that took place behind the scenes, I look back to when we had the issue with the swine flu when I first joined the board a number of years ago, and it was a collaborative effort at that time. The board stayed with the superintendent till midnight, the night we were notified of the families having the issue. So again, not the exact same situation, but similar in the sense that there was a threat to our student population. We stayed with the superintendent. We worked with the proper authorities. We came up with a plan, and we notified the community immediately. I guess for me, it's hard to, without knowing and having sat in those meetings, understand exactly what I would have done differently. The one thing I think we need to do, though, is have a consistent communication that goes out to everybody at the same time with accurate and up-to-date information.
Yeah. For you, Art? Did they do a good job? Was it the right thing to do to withhold information, given that they feel like they had taken care of things back in October?
I believe that more transparency, openness with regard to their communication would have been more appropriate than what they did. The last-minute attempt to give information simply incited more distrust and a lack of knowing what to do. Had I been in that situation, I think that I might have just called a snow day said, you know what, we've got one built in, let's just do this, let it go. As it turned out, more than half of the population of the students was gone anyway. So it turned out to be a wasted day, no matter which way you put it.
Yeah, Petra, you're the security and safety expert.
Right.
What would you have done differently?
You know what? I again, Leslie, I'm like both of these gentlemen sitting next to me. I don't know all the details of what transpired, but I believe in timeliness of information. And if there was an incident that was handled back in October, information should have put out probably back in October that the incident had been rectified, that there wasn't any issue. I think the big problem was people were concerned that they waited so long. And I think timeliness, as Mo had mentioned earlier, is critical, as well as much information that could be put out. Because if you look at the incident that recently happened over at Ecker, you can see the amount of information that was put out. I mean, it was almost every detail. So I think timeliness and accuracy are really critical.
What I have heard following the failure of last fall's $56 million bond is that it failed in part because of just the attitude of the school board members. One board member stating that if voters didn't pass the bond, they would just impose a capital tax levy. How would you have managed that situation? And I think it's Mo's turn, Art's turn to go first.
I was present in some of the meetings where comments like that were made, and I found it to be abrasive and certainly highlighted a type of elitism where they felt like they knew best and they'd figured it out and that was the way it's going to be. And if they didn't like it, it was almost like somebody's mother forcing you to eat the peas that were on your plate, regardless of how full you were. We are a community and we work together as adults. We don't force things down each other's throats. It was an inappropriate approach to take. And it highlighted an attitude that needs to be eradicated from the school board.
Petra?
I agree with what Art has to say, and I just want to add a few things. I think that is definitely a problem. The issues that the board makes decisions on, you can't take that personally, and I think there are certain members of the board that have taken the failure of the bond very, very personally. And like I said previously, it's time to put what's happened behind us, and it's time to move forward, and we need to work together as a community. We need to listen to members of the community, and we need to move forward.
And Mo, you certainly kind of were on the board leading up to this, and yet not there for the final part of it. So how would you have managed things differently?
Well, I think one of the things that had been discussed in master planning, which could have offset what you describe as threatening that we'll go in this direction if you don't like what we have, would have been to lay out all the different funding options and make sure that they were very well known within the public. The Master Planning Committee had looked at all those options, meaning whether we had a bond, whether we had a capital levy, whether we paid for it out of existing funds. When all the focus went towards the bond, I think that was left out of the conversation and should have been kept in the conversation because it is, you know, you can't say we're definitely going to pass a bond, which was proven. But I think letting the community know that these options were out there or potentially out there would have been more than enough to offset having to make comments where if we don't pass this, we're going to do this to you. And I think that's how I would have handled it.
Let's talk about, this is something a listener wanted to know. Did you vote in favor or against the $56 million bond last fall? And if you voted against, why?
Make it simple. I voted in favor.
Okay. Arn?
I voted against it because I felt that there was time enough for us to go over the details of the bond to make it right so that people understood what it was about. There was a significant amount of distrust as to where the money was going to be used. There were also questions as to whether the approach that they were taking of moving the field from one side to the other really made sense to do and move forward with. I felt that working through it for another 12 months or so would help the community and bring us a greater sense of cohesiveness as we move forward.
And Petra, how did you vote?
I did not support the bond as well. I had concerns about a field house. I had concerns about the moving of the football field. I had a number of concerns with regard to where the money was actually being spent. And I think the opposition did a great job of highlighting those issues, which made me very concerned.
Certainly, with grade realignment moving forward, we're going to need some place to put the children, because part of that is tearing down Treasure Mountain Junior High School. Mo, I can answer for you. You support Treasure Mountain being torn down?
Yes.
Okay, what about the other two of you? I mean, is that something that we need to fix, or do we just start over?
It's a good question. Treasure Mountain has served its purpose, and it appears that at this juncture, it appears that the better answer may be to start over. There have been some people in the community who've been concerned that it's a sick school, that it has some issues that need to be corrected from the foundation up. Now, we've heard previous administrations, previous superintendents say that the school is not sick, that we don't have those problems in the school. But I believe that there comes a time when a building has reached its functionally obsolete. And Treasure Mountain may have gotten to that point.
And Petra?
And I did my own research with regard to this. I actually went and took a tour. I looked at the analysis that was done by the company that came in and reviewed the school. There are multiple issues with the school, not just the issue of it being sick, which I'm not sure is accurate. But it would cost us $19 million to bring the school up to code at this point. And I'm not really sure that's an investment that we should take on at this point. I would rather see that the school be taken down and that money used elsewhere.
Mo?
Can I just add to that? I agree with what Petra just said. Not only is it the $19 million to bring it up to, and we don't have to be at code, so to speak, within the school district, but to bring it up to code, but even that would not address the academic deficiencies in the building. Classrooms are small, they're dark, there's low ceilings. The hallways, the joke, I lived in Hong Kong for a number of years, and I told my kids when they went to Treasure Mountain, walk like you're in Hong Kong, which is look down and put your elbows out to get through the hallways. It's just not a functional building, and I agree, we don't know whether it's a sick building or not a sick building. We do know that there are tailings. We're going to be mitigating the fields next to Treasure Mountain this summer. So I think when you look at it in its totality, the cost that would have to go in to just bring the building, up to a reasonable standard, it would be more than offset by looking at other alternatives.
As part of the bond, and I think I hear agreement from all of you that you do support moving forward with grade realignment, that being ninth grade going into the high school. What we haven't figured out yet is whether it makes most sense to build a new K through sixth grade elementary school and redivvy up the school boundaries, or do we build a new 5-6 schools as was proposed in last fall's bond? How do you feel about that, Art?
I tend to support the idea of a new K through 6 school as opposed to the realignment that's been put forth. I believe that those traditional approaches are better accepted by the community and that they're better for the children involved. Those two things would tend to push me in that direction.
So where, given the land costs?
It's a good question. We do have some land that's out near Kimball Junction that could be a good place to put a school. I think that there are other alternatives that are out there, but we do have that option.
Petra, how do you feel? K-6 or 5-6?
You know, I'm the jury for me is still out on this one. I'm still doing some research. I can tell you I've knocked on a lot of doors thus far in my campaign, and this is a hot-button issue for people, for parents who have kids in the elementary school. I need to see data to support one way or another. I need to know whether a 5-6 is going to make more sense for our students and why. I've talked to a lot of teachers, and they say it's based on curriculum. Project-based learning is what they want to do. I'd like to see the data that supports that. Preferentially, myself, I would lean towards a K through 6 and lessen the number of students in our other elementary schools. However, I'm still open to the idea of a 5-6 school. I just would like to see that data.
Mo?
I lean towards a pre-K to 6 model. I've been asking the question, and I haven't gotten an answer. What would be the academic benefits of keeping 5-6 versus a pre-K to 6? Pre-K to 6 in Utah is elementary, so I think the curriculum could be adjusted across all grade levels. If it's project-based learning, there's a movement nationwide to bring project-based learning, which is not a new concept, which is another thing we can talk about, but to bring project-based learning back down to kindergarten and up from there. So I don't think that's a substantial enough reason, and I haven't really heard a reason yet why one is preferential over the other. So I tend to like the pre-K-6 model simply because we keep neighborhood schools. It would cut down on transportation costs. The challenge there would be that we would have to do reboundaries to make it work. The location that I'd like to look at, which I brought up during master planning when we were even looking at the fifth and sixth grade school, is the school district does own land at the base of Bear Hollow, which is set, is only zoned for a school when it was donated to the school district. That's one area I'd like to look at, but it would, my preference would be to have it on that side of town because that's where 75% of our student population now lives.
Let's turn the conversation to Common Core. Petra, Governor Mike Leavitt was a big supporter of Common Core, saying it was something that was done at the state level rather than mandated by the feds. This was a good thing. Now he's backing off of his support of Common Core, and I guess it's anybody's guess as whether that's being done to get reelected or perhaps maybe because Common Core isn't having the results we expected. Do you support Common Core? Why or why not?
I do not support Common Core, and this is something that I have been gathering further information on. It's not the issue itself with Common Core. I think it's the way that it's being implemented that is problematic. When Common Core was rolled out, it was basically given to each school district, you figure out how you're going to implement it. So it's not implemented the same way across the board, which may be good, which may be bad. So in the process of developing Common Core, we've had to come up with our own textbooks, our own plans, our own way of moving forward. And I'm not really sure that that was a good idea.
Mo?
I support the concept of Common Core. I agree with Petra. I mean, Common Core is a set of standards. So it's not a curriculum. It's a set of standards. So I think that raising the bar on the standards across the country was important and needed at that time. I think the problem is it became a political issue, both at the legislative at local issue here and nationally. And a lot of it on the implementation was not just saying districts look at it and do it your own way. It became districts do it your own way, but you have to tie it into teacher evaluations or you have to tie it into standardized testings. So again, I think the misconception is the Common Core is a set of elevated standards in core curriculum areas. The implementation, I think, has been a challenge across the country.
Well, I think, would you agree that that's because we've got kind of the homeschool community and religious communities getting involved in this? I mean, here, even in Utah, we would not accept the science part of core curriculum because of the fight over whether or not we teach evolution or, the Christian way of how Earth began. Let's let you answer here, Art, in terms of your advice on your feelings on Common Core.
I think that Mo and Petra have expressed my feelings as well. The primary issue with Common Core is implementation. We've begun moving toward teaching more and more toward the test as opposed to teaching and helping kids to grow and learn. When you teach toward a test, then you've essentially taken the creativity and the growth that might otherwise have come out of true learning and pulled it out. You've done the equivalent with more and more testing of planting flowers and then every other day pulling it up by the roots to see how those roots and flowers are doing. You end up killing the flowers.
Well, let's move on to you. The district office mandates that teachers implement programs like IB, International Baccalaureate, SIOP. Substantial dollars were invested in training teachers in these new programs. Then the district finds something new and shiny and abandons these programs. How can you ensure that teachers are only mandated to implement best practices?
I think we have to look at, again at what is the research behind things and when we're going to implement something like the IAB IB program is a good example. The IB program was started at the middle school level here, and I think at the time it really should have been looked at and looked at what was successful in other school districts across the country. IB programs were only successful when you had an end result in place, which meant that the high school had to be an IB program. When you come out of Treasure Mountain at that time and you've been through 2 years of IB, and then there's really nothing other than a certificate for the students, right? Okay, you went through an IB program, which may or may not have helped on their resume. But not having it go through the high school level was a mistake. So I think one of the things that is important is that we say, here's the research-based programs if we're going to look at it, and we see if it can be implemented to meet the needs of our district. We have a very unique district in the one sense. We have a great disparity between our affluent population and our socioeconomically deprived population. And I think we have to look at a program that meets those needs. But also, I think the teachers have to be involved in the discussion prior to choosing a program and also in how the program's going to be implemented. We have a lot of excellent teachers in this district who could add a lot of their experience and knowledge to that process to make sure that it's implemented properly.
All right, I want to change this up just a little bit, but another one of these programs is dual immersion, something I believe that you are against. And again, part of the problem that we're seeing is that it took the program out to fifth grade, and now we're scratching our heads about how do we continue this program. So like Mo said, we really didn't think this through. But why are you against dual immersion, though?
One of the problems with, and I want to make it clear that I appreciate the study of language. My undergraduate is in English and German. My mother was Dutch. I appreciate what it is for people. I'm really only one generation off the boat. I appreciate what it is for people to come to this country and want to integrate and fit in. And when I look at dual immersion, I think of it as a program where we may, and I'd like to see the data to figure out whether this is actually accurate, but we may be riding on the backs of those who can afford it least. We have people who speak English as a second language. We're using them to help us learn Spanish. And while that's a laudable idea, we want to learn the language, it appears, based on what we're seeing, that we're actually holding those who need it most back. So if dual immersion holds people back, I certainly don't want to have my children take advantage of that to the detriment of other children.
Petra, how do you feel about dual immersion?
I support dual immersion, but I want to tie that into the question that you were asking, Mo, with regard to fiscal responsibility. I think we have a problem with checks and balances in this district. You talked about these shiny new things that we implement, but yet we have no vision or a system in place to make sure that they're working. I think that is something that we have to address. When we bring these shiny new things, we need to make sure that the teachers are involved, as Mo had mentioned earlier, from the get-go, that they help to design what the outcome is going to be. I mean, these are the individuals that are in the classroom every day with our children, and if we're not going to get buy-in from our teachers, I think we're going to struggle with implementing that program. But I'd like to see better fiscal responsibility. I want to make sure that those dollars are being spent to the benefit of our children. And right now we have two different languages that are being taught in our schools. And I think that's great, but from a fiscal responsibility, is that really where we should be putting our money at this point in time? There are a lot of issues that we need to address in the district with regard to funds.
So which one do we cut out, French or Spanish?
I don't know the answer to that. I'm not even sure. I'd like to see a sustainable budget. I'd like to see where those dollars are and how much it costs for each of those programs. I'd like to address preschool. I mean, there are a number of issues that I think that we need to talk about, and we need to figure out where the dollars need to be spent.
What about PC caps, Peter? Let's start with that. Taxpayers have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on this program. So do we continue to dump money into the program when we have 20 children registered for it next year?
You know, I was at the school board meeting just this past week where they did a presentation with regard to PC caps and the STEM program and where that's going. And that is a very, very legitimate question. Do I know the answer to that one? I don't. But you know what? I don't understand if we have 20 children in this program, and in the past we've had a lot more. I'd like to understand why we don't have more children going into this program, what the changes were that caused that to happen. I think the management with regard to PC caps, the instructors have changed, and the way the program is being implemented is changing. So I need to get a better understanding of that. But if we have 20 children involved in this program, I think we need to look at changing or modifying that program to bring in more children.
Mo, you were part of that school board that moved PC caps along, and in fact, were even in support, I believe, of building a $5 million PC caps building.
Right. And the problem I see with PC caps right now is the program was off to a great start. If you recall, we had over 140 students when the program first started in the first couple of years. Then the program director's position was changed to a part-time position. We've locked into a schedule where it can only be in third and fourth period every other day, which in Park City causes a major problem. We didn't have the problem the first year. I think it was new, which had some excitement attached to it, and we had a director who was full-time who was able to work with both the staff and the counselors and the community to continue to develop the program. So I think we've cut off – this goes back to your earlier question. We've started a program, and then we've basically cut half the support mechanism for the program. Secondly, the reason I bring up third and fourth period is this past year at the high school, we had over 35% of our students taking either late start or early release, which means we have to look at a program like PC CAPS, which needs two periods. And we have to look at, are we offering it at the right time for it to be successful, meaning should it be a second and third period mix? Should we not go and lock ourselves into it has to be a two-period class, maybe a one-period class? Because, again, a lot of our students at the high school don't have the space to add another elective at that time. Also, we have to look at going back to feeder program. I think we should have – I mean, project-based learning is, as I said earlier, is not new. Project-based learning has been something that – when I went to school, we were doing it. We didn't take we didn't read a book and take a multiple choice test. We did book reports. We had oral presentations. We had dioramas when we were younger. In science, we didn't do the same thing. We had hands-on learning experience, whether it was dissecting an animal or blowing something up in the lab. We've gotten away from that, and I think PC CAPS is something that engages a lot of students who feel that they need to be in a program like that. But again, I think you can always improve the program and look at ways that it addresses the needs of our community as opposed to taking the model and saying this is the only way it works.
Okay, Art Brothers.
Clearly, when a program has declined from 140 people to 20 people involved with it, we need to take a close look at what the problem is and how to change things around. The idea behind PC CAPS, I think at its core, is to involve students and businesses together in ideas that will help the local businesses, but will also help the students find a way to employment with those businesses. So it creates a more integrated model. If we are struggling, and I hate to harp on this, but if we're struggling to have those same kids read at a level that is grade level proficient, we're clearly failing in basic academic core subjects that we need to work on. PC CAPS sounds good, and like a lot of other things that sound good, it's not necessarily, you know, from a distance, it looks shiny and bright. You get close and you find it's tinfoil and kitty litter.
All right. I want to be able to have you guys ask each question with your closing statements, so I guess I really need a very short answer on this one. The superintendent's leadership has been called into question recently. Mo, is she doing a great job and has made just a few poor decisions, or do we begin to look for somebody else when the contract runs out?
I think the superintendent has been doing a good job. I think what we have to do is look at it. It's not an isolated position, even though it appears that way. I think we have to look at the total team and see what's taking place. Again, it seems interesting that I've only been out for a year, but it seems a lot has changed in that time, and I'd like to find out more about what's going on.
Art?
I believe it's time for us to begin looking for somebody else. I believe that we've been on a downhill slide for the last several years, and while I like Dr. Connolly as a person and I wish her well, I don't believe that her leadership has been what we need in the Park City District.
Petra?
Cultural change is not a quick thing. It takes time. And I think that whole mindset with regard to what's happening here in Park City needs to change, and that takes time. She's been in her position 3 years. I think she's had some issues that she's had to deal with. I think she's had to fix, correct, change, whatever you want to call it, many things that were left in her lap. And I think in dealing with some of those issues, she has done a good job. I think she's really going to have to work really hard this last year in order to remain in the position that she's in. I think it's something that she will be watched very closely, not only by members of the board, by the community as a whole, because now we have this communications director that's going to help her. I think the board is going to be much more engaged, and I think time will tell. We'll know shortly.
Okay. We're going to start back here. Art, do you have a question for either of your opponents that you'd like to answer?
I like Mo and I like Petra, and I consider them friends. I appreciate being able to run with them, and I appreciate the good that they've brought to the district and their public-spirited discourse and the work that they put into things. I don't have any questions for them besides I just want to thank them for the work that they've done.
Petra, your opportunity here to ask one of your opponents a question.
No, you know what? I'd like to have a discussion, though, about fiscal responsibility because I think it's something that's really important in this district. We've talked about having a sustainable budget, and I had conversations with both these gentlemen about our sustainable budget, but it's something I'd like to discuss as a whole if we have time, Leslie.
Well, let's go to Mo, see if he's got a question.
Well, I think Petra was asking a question about the sustainable budget. I mean, if we want to address that now, or do you want to go to...
No, do you have a question for either one of those? Because actually I have a question for each of you, since you're not going to...
I'll go for a question. And I'm just more interested in, we just finished the What Counts exercise, and I think, did you both participate? Okay, so maybe this is a good opportunity then. In What Counts, you ask, the questions are asked are, what are some things we're doing well in the school district, and what are things that need to be improved upon? If there were one of each, what would you pick? Something that we do well, something we need to improve upon.
The two things that I'd like to see improved upon, obviously, are the performance gap that we have in the district, helping those students who are in immediate need of help, bringing them around. I believe that we do well from an AP perspective, and we give students great opportunity in that direction. I would like to see us do more, much more, with concurrent enrollment. There is a large group in the middle that would be benefited by concurrent enrollment who could graduate from Park City High School with the equivalent of an associate's degree moving out into the world. That would be a great thing to work with and improve upon.
Petra?
I would like to see us improve upon community partnership, and you've heard me harp on this before. I think it would help with closing that achievement gap. I mean, I think we need to look at the child as a whole, and we need to work on those things that impact the child outside of school to make the child more successful in school. I mean, we've talked about housing in this community. It's very expensive. We've talked about mental health issues. I mean, there are a number of issues that I think we need to get community partnership on board with in our schools to address, to make things better for children in school.
Petra, and this may come back to your fiscal responsibility question. Politics usually do not make a difference in school board races. They're nonpartisan races. But the concern I have heard about you specifically is that you align yourself politically with the Tea Party. So can you address that? And given perhaps that answer, I mean, is that why you're so concerned about fiscal responsibility? That sounds like really a Tea Party, you know, tag word.
No, I don't align myself specifically with the Tea Party. I just come from an organization where you have to account for all the dollars that you spend, and it's something that I believe in, and I think that the district needs to be held fiscally responsible. It's a duty not only to all the taxpayers, but to everybody in our community, and so I want to make sure that fiscal responsibility is at the top of our list.
Mo, I want to have you address the public criticism over the lack of transparency while you were president of the school board. Two board members reportedly on the board for a year and a half never even knew about a small select group meeting on master planning. And it was this master planning committee that reportedly met without calling all of its members to the meeting, that didn't post minutes or meeting agendas, and then also suddenly came up with this recommendation for this $5 million CAPS building. That's when we saw the call for a total master plan for the whole district. So, I mean, just, in, you know, you say you want to be transparency, but yet we see under your leadership this happening.
I dispute the fact that that's actually what took place. There was a group that was chosen by the board in a public meeting, which was made up of the superintendent, the associate superintendent, the person that was being hired at the time, Jennifer Jackenthal, in the CAPS program. There were teachers in the CAPS program. And then it was not handled by the board at that time, meaning it was passed over to that group to come forward to the board with recommendations on what was needed for the CAPS program. It wasn't secret. The reason we started looking at the building was because we were originally leasing, if you recall, on Sidewinder, a space which the rent was going to be going up in a prohibitive fashion for us from a long-term standpoint, and we wouldn't be able to get a long-term lease. So it was weighing those two factors. But it was not a board committee. It was a committee made up of the people that were involved in the CAPS program at that time, as well as the curriculum director, to look at our needs for STEM moving forward. So again, I dispute the fact that it was a secret meeting. And the discussions all took place in public.
All right. And Art, we got to get your rumor control under control here. Word on the street is that you're thinking about pulling out of the race and asking people to, you know, sending your supporters to vote Petra. Are you going to pull out?
No, I'm not pulling out of the race. I have talked about the possibility of doing that because I see Petra as being a good, solid individual, somebody who could help in putting things together. And if I were elected, I would certainly want her help to continue to move forward, to utilize her skills at investigation and her strengths and her passion for bringing things together. If on the other hand, she's elected, then I'd like to help her to the extent that I could do that. I think that I could serve as a better voice for the community, as a head, so to speak, in that direction. But no, I'm going to continue to move forward with things. I hope, in fact, that if elected, I could also ask Mo for his experience in working with the budget and that we could continue to work together as a group to help bring better things to our district.
All right, we're going to end with the 30-second closing statement. Petra, you first.
Okay. Thank you again for having me today. Folks, I would just like to say that Thursday morning, 8:30 at Hugo's, I'm going to have a coffee hour, so please come and join me if you have any questions. I'll be there as long as people are there to ask me questions. Again, Thursday morning, 8:30 at Hugo's. I'd also like to thank the community for their support. They've been fantastic, especially all the doors I've knocked on, the families that have invited me in for lunch, and I look forward to serving, if not on this board, then in some other way in the community.
All right, Mo Hickey.
I want to thank you for giving us this opportunity, first off, and I hope to move forward and be able to serve again on the board. I think we're facing crucial times in this district in terms of continuing on a path towards excellence. I think it's a time to bring experience, and one of the main board functions is financial and fiscal responsibility, which I feel I can bring a skill set to that position.
All right. Giving you the last word, Art Brothers.
Leslie, thanks for bringing us all in to talk together about this. KPCW provides an invaluable service to the community in providing forums like this. I'm grateful to be a part of it and to be able to help to shape the debate and the movement that we're working toward. I don't know where the answers will come. I don't know how they'll come together completely. My objective is to be open to the ideas that are put forth in the community, to listen to them carefully, and to find the common ground that we can in order to do the best thing for our students, for the administration, for our teachers.
Okay. Art Brothers, Peter Butler, Mo Hickey, again, big thank you for joining us this morning. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:53. Stay tuned. I'll be checking in with Summit County Clerk Kent Jones right after this.
This is Travis Vernon, fly fishing coordinator of JANS and longtime supporter of KPCW. Our fly fishing department and guide service is open year-round and offers a full line of flies and product, including brands like Sims, Sage, and Fish Pond. We also rent rods, reels, and waders. Available at the flagship store on Park Avenue, 649-4949 or JANS.com.
Additional support for programming on KPCW is provided by Sammy's Bistro on Bonanza Drive, open daily, 11 a.m., sammysbistro.com. Peterson Calder Real Estate, Berkshire Hathaway, selling Park City since 1989, experienceparkcity.com. Sean Potter, Estate Planning in Summit and Wasatch Counties, wasatchlawgroup.com, 647-5951. Done to Your Taste Catering, 21 years perfecting life celebrations, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Proud sponsor of KPCW, the DeGioia Center features our in-house restaurant, State Road Tavern, serving brunch every Sunday, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., featuring smoked brisket and pastrami hash, pork verde chili killies, and blue crab benedict. Outdoor dining and full bar available. More information at stateroadtavern.com.
For the first time, Summit County voters will be using mail-in voting to cast their ballots for this year's primary and general election ballots. Those ballots were sent out to Summit County voters last week on the phone to give us an idea of how it's going so far. Summit County Clerk Kent Jones joins me now on the phone. Good morning, Kent.
Good morning, Leslie.
So how many ballots did you send out?
Around 22,000.
Okay, and you and at what, 46 cents a shot?
Well, yes, that's pretty close. It'll probably be somewhere a total when you add up the cost of the envelopes of printing and the total cost around $1 a ballot.
All right. How many of those have been returned to you?
Yesterday we got back about 180.
Okay, and that's about, so you got a couple hundred only that have been returned?
Yeah, and then the mail hasn't came in yet this morning, and we'll hit drop boxes and bring in ballots and then start certifying those that come in each day.
Okay, so why are we doing this? I mean, some say it's a clear example of if it's not broken, let's fix it anyway.
Well, a couple of years ago, the clerks across the state started talking about what system we would go to for the next generation of voting systems, because our system that we have is nearing the end of its life. And we haven't come up with that next system yet. And as an alternative, some counties tried vote by mail. They've been doing it now for 2 or 3 years. And the response and the comment from the vote by mail was pretty positive in other counties. And so it's kind of the way that the entire state has moved until we come up with that next generation system.
You know, as you recall, there were so many concerns with ballot tampering when we were discussing electronic voting years ago. This seems so much more vulnerable. I mean, if I moved, the person living in my former house could just return the ballot, or ballots could just be pulled out of the box. We see that happen all the time. People don't think twice about stealing people's mail. Are you at all concerned about that?
No. The process that we have in place to verify ballots, we have signatures from every registered voter on file, and the process will be that every ballot that's returned will be verified against the signature that we have on file. And once those ballots come in, we batch them in batches of 50 and log them onto the voter database. And so only one ballot can be counted per voter. That's guaranteed, because as soon as we give voting credit, then even if they tried to vote a second time, it would tell us that they'd already voted, that we'd already counted a ballot. And every envelope that comes back in will be matched against the signature that we have on file. So that person would have to match that signature without question in order to try and make it through the system.
Still, I mean, here we are thinking that we're in the age of the computer, and now we are hand counting ballots and verifying visually signatures. It just seems like we're going back to the Stone Age.
Well, that's some people may feel that, but you know, with every system, there's probably positives and negatives, pros and cons. A lot of the positives about the vote by mail is that people are able to take whatever time they need to cast their vote informed, or study the issues and do it at the convenience of their own home. And the turnout normally is a little higher percentage of voters that are participating. So there, you know, there's pros and cons on either one. The system that we have used in the past 10 years has been a very good system. I have no issues or concerns with using the system. And on Election Day, we will still have 4 vote centers open, intended for those people who registered after we mailed ballots out, or for ADA and for people who, you know, have some kind of a concern over their mail-in ballot. So
where were those?
The intent is to have the ballots returned by mail, but we will have vote centers open on Election Day.
Where are those going to be?
There are four locations, one at Colville City Hall, one at Camas City Hall, cover the north and south of an area, one at the Marsack Building uptown in Park City, and out at Ecker Hill Middle School for the basin.
Okay, so the way it works, I mean, it comes in, you pull out the ballot, there's a circle that you need to fill in with the candidate of your choice, you sign the envelope, you put it back in, and you got to make sure you put your own stamp on it, right?
You don't have to mail it with a stamp. There are drop boxes at various locations. We have one at Colville City Hall, Camas City Hall, Park City Municipal, at the Ridgens Building, there at the library, at Trailside Admin Building, and out at the Fresh Market by Jeremy Ranch. So there are drop boxes that you can just walk and drop it. You know, if you're going grocery shopping, you can drop your ballot there and you don't have to put a stamp on. And we'll pick those up every other day.
And what happens if I didn't get a ballot?
If you didn't get a ballot, you can call us. We will do some additional mailings up until Election Day for those who we're still getting online registrations, and people can still register online. And so for those people who didn't get a ballot mailed to them, either a ballot will be mailed to them on a second or third mailing, or they can come on Election Day to a vote center.
Okay, and you know me, I've got just a few seconds left, but you know me, and I want results on election night quickly. How long is it going to take to hand count these votes?
Well, the votes are counted by optic scan. So we'll run them through the scanners. It will be loaded on the server, and then we'll print out reports just like we do on every other election. So on election night, we should have pretty much everything that we've got up to that point counted and will be reported on election night. And then whatever comes in afterwards, I think we'll release updated information on Friday after Election Day and on the next Tuesday.
So a race could be called days later as opposed to the night of?
Well,
if it was close?
No different than any other election. On election night, you have election night results. That's not official results. So the numbers will change between then and the canvas. That's no different than in the past. But here again, what we've always seen as the history is if someone is substantially in the lead, those percentages don't change when you add more numbers to them. If it's a real tight race, you know, who knows how that, it may or may not affect the outcome, but that's something we don't know until all the votes are tabulated.
Okay. Kent, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Summit County Clerk Kent Jones.
Morning Edition and Morning News with Leslie Thatcher is brought to you in part by Park City Medical Center, Jans Mountain Outfitters, Deer Valley Resort, and the Promontory Foundation.